Good afternoon. From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. This weekend, young Juneau musicians got a chance to bring down the house at a dual fundraiser for the Juneau Soccer Club and a music program that groups up kids who want to play in rock bands. It's Saturday at 6 p.m., and a crowd full of kids and their parents are jamming out to the Flaming Fjords at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. The band, made up mostly of middle schoolers, is playing a cover of the 2011 hit Safe and Sound. That's Harper McFerrin, 12 years old, on the keys.
It was really exhilarating. I feel like eventually I just started fading into, like, with the light. Like, I just got into the groove of it.
She's been a part of Nagoonberries since the fall. It's a local music education organization that forms bands for kids and adults alike to practice and play with.
Once you had a song memorized, you didn't have to practice too much, but I practiced a lot, like, in the last few days.
Rock and soccer mom Nikki Bass started this fundraiser, Rock and Goal, last year. In the hallway between sets, she says soccer and rock music may seem different, but there's some overlap.
Both programs just really instill confidence and teamwork and just, you know, working hard.
Bass says the first year, grown-ups were surprised at their kids' shredding skills.
The crowd, including myself, but the crowd was just so blown away by the talent. You know, at first you're thinking, okay, kids in a rock band, this is going to be awesome, it'll be cute, but no, they're so good. They're all just so good.
Her son's high school band, Downrigger, is up next. Frontwoman 15-year-old Alani Hope Mateo has been playing guitar for more than half of her life. Mateo says she finds the mission of Nagoonberries inspirational.
Oh my gosh, I love this program. I mean, they encourage everyone to come play rock music. They can encourage, like, really, really young kids or teenagers like me or just adults, and they always, like, gather people together and everyone gets to hear them. So I love how encouraging they are.
She plans to keep playing music and performing on stages in Juneau because it's fun, but also because she wants to show other young people what they can be capable of.
Well, I think that it gives them a bit more confidence that they can go on stage. Especially, like, if you're a teenager trying to, like, oh, I want to go on stage, but I'm a little scared to. Seeing other teenagers do it and just, you know, feel a little bit more confident about themselves, too. At least that's what I want for other people to feel when I'm up on stage, is that I can give them confidence as well.
And with the confidence she's found in the program, Mateo also writes and performs her own songs.
And this next song I wrote...
This is her song, The Angel. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery.
She looks just like an angel. He's just a stranger to her. He won't know love is fatal. Not until her first soar. Don't ask where she's from. Look to heaven above. And it's gross. It's horrifying. How much she's gonna hold on
And last summer, a giant landslide in southeast Alaska triggered a tsunami nearly as high as the One World Trade Center building in New York City. Researchers spent months studying the event. In a new paper, they conclude the landslide tsunami was the second largest on record. And they warn that these events could become more common as the landscape shifts with climate change. As Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, that spells trouble for those who work and play in Alaska's pristine fjords, including the cruise industry.
Brettwood Higman has spent years scouring Alaska's mountains for signs of potential landslides. One place he looked was the Tracy Arm Fjord, a popular cruise destination between Juneau and Petersburg.
I did actually look there.
But he didn't see any red flags, so Higman was caught completely off guard when a mountainside collapsed into the fjord early one morning last August. It generated one of the largest landslide tsunamis in recorded history. Experts say it would have been unsurvivable if any boats had been there.
I have tried to, you know, encourage my colleagues to look at this and explicitly acknowledge it as a failure. We clearly did not identify this beforehand.
The shock of it all underscores how hard it is to monitor for and predict these types of events, and that there's a long way to go before experts can do so reliably. It also shows the widespread nature of the risk, which is growing with climate change.
We have lots of, like, you know, slopes that we are worried about in Alaska that are failing because of a retreating glacier.
That's Ezgi Korososen, a research seismologist with the Alaska Earthquake Center.
In a sense that we were all caught off guard says a lot about these hazards, and we should be acting more quickly on that.
Higman and Korososen are among more than a dozen experts who spent months studying the August 10 event. In a paper published Wednesday in the journal Science, they answered a long list of questions about the tsunami, including its historic size. Perhaps most important, though, are answers around what might have caused the giant landslide that generated the tsunami. Those could be used to pinpoint new spots where similar slides might happen down the line, Korososen says.
This event gave us some clues on that end.
One telltale sign is something called deformation. That's when a slope's bedrock starts cracking and shifting. Notably, that wasn't really happening at the site of the landslide, which is why it hadn't set off alarm bells. But the new research pinpointed a few things that were happening. For starters, Higman says, a glacier at the base of the mountain in question had retreated rapidly in the weeks leading up to the slide, newly exposing the base of the slope.
The result of that would be that those slopes are not able to hold themselves up when there isn't a glacier there.
There were other factors, too. When the researchers looked back at data from the hours before the landslide, they noticed seismic activity that looked like small, distinctive earthquakes happening over and over again. There was also a heavy bout of rain. Higman says a stronger grasp on those factors and what they mean could help experts catch the next landslide tsunami before it happens.
In this case, it could have given us over a day of warning, plenty of time for vessels to get out of the way. Yeah, that's pretty attractive.
It's only becoming more important, he says, as glaciers recede and precipitation intensifies with climate change. Reporting in Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
And the Alaska legislature is asking the federal government for some flexibility when it comes to implementing a massive program intended to transform rural healthcare across the state. Alaska received $272 million from the Federal Rural Health Transformation Program, part of the One Big Beautiful Bill that passed last summer, putting it on track to receive nearly $1.4 billion over 5 years. It's the largest per capita grant for any state in the $50 billion federal program. But State Senator Forrest Dunbar, an Anchorage Democrat who chairs the Senate's Health and Social Services Committee, says that funding comes with limits to what it can be spent on and when.
Particularly because there were Medicaid cuts and other funding cuts associated with H.R. 1, it's not clear that that money can go where it's most needed.
The Department of Health says it received nearly 1,800 proposals for how to spend the first round of federal funding. One major limit is that the funding can't be used to construct or expand healthcare facilities like hospitals or badly needed housing for healthcare workers. Another is the timing. The first round of funding has to be allocated by the end of September and fully spent within the following year. The legislature's healthcare liaison told lawmakers that the short timeline is challenging in rural Alaska, where a missed barge delivery or poor weather can lead to long delays. Another source of heartburn is a series of commitments the State Department of Health made in its applications to the federal government. It said the legislature would pass a series of license compacts, which make it easier for health providers from outside the state to practice in Alaska. A compact for nurses has been especially controversial, and it's unclear how much money could be clawed back if the legislature doesn't pass the compact by the end of 2027. Representative Genevieve Mina, an Anchorage Democrat and the resolution's main sponsor, said during a floor debate in March, the legislature needed more information as it weighed the pros and cons.
We want more clarity on what these provisions would mean in terms of the award that we currently have and the money that we lose.
Lawmakers have yet to pass any of the license compact bills, and the end of the regular legislative session is fast approaching. The resolution says the legislature is committed to the goals of the program and calls on the governor and Alaska's congressional delegation to push for clarity and flexibility. And, as a resolution, it cannot be vetoed. And new survey results show Alaska's confidence in the economy is nearly at the lowest point since the survey began 16 years ago. Pollster Ivan Moore of Alaska Survey Research has been asking Alaskans four times a year how they'd rate the economy of their community and the state as a whole. Moore says Alaskans are decidedly pessimistic about their economic conditions.
We're at a lower point than we were at any point during the COVID years, which is extraordinary, really, when you think about it.
Typically, Moore says, Alaskans feel better about the economy when oil prices are high, but they're high now, and Moore says it doesn't seem to be boosting morale.
Obviously, people are feeling the bite of unresolved cost of living issues and the price of gas, obviously right now with the war in Iran, and the lingering effects of post-COVID inflation.
Moore launched the Alaska Confidence Index in 2010 with an economic consulting firm as a sponsor. He's kept it going as part of an online survey of 750 Alaskans that he conducts quarterly. Nationally, consumer confidence is also relatively low, at levels similar to those recorded during the COVID-19 pandemic. Economists watch confidence indexes as an indicator of future spending trends and economic growth. A bill that seeks to make it easier for Alaskans to repair consumer electronics cleared the state Senate today and is on its way to the House. Senate Bill 111 is known as the Consumer Digital Right to Repair Act. It would require electronics manufacturers to provide parts, documentation, and tools to Alaskans looking to fix things like broken cell phones, laptops, security cameras, and baby monitors. They'd be required to sell those to individual and independent repair shops on the same terms they give manufacturer-authorized service providers. Bill sponsor Senator Forrest Dunbar, an Anchorage Democrat, says hundreds of Alaskans sent postcards urging legislators to support the bill. He says far too often, companies make it difficult or expensive for anyone but an authorized technician to work on their products, and they wind up in landfills.
Declining repairability is not caused by alleged technical problems inherent to modern products. It is a choice made by some manufacturers to exert control and extract profits beyond the initial sale.
The bill is limited to consumer electronics, so it doesn't cover things like cars, snow machines, farm equipment, or medical devices. Dunbar says he wishes the Senate would have supported a broader approach. During hearings on the bill, advocates pointed to tactics employed by manufacturers like John Deere that limit farmers' ability to repair their own tractors or combines. But legislators pared back the bill after pressure from Alaska-based power sports and heavy equipment dealers, who said it would hurt their business model. Tech industry groups also opposed the bill, saying unauthorized repairs could be low quality or introduce security risks. Senator Mike Kronk, a Tok Republican and the Senate's minority leader, said he's concerned the bill could have unintended consequences.
Alaska is a relatively drop in the bucket compared to the markets here, and I don't really want to be, you know, punishing the manufacturers for being up here and maybe even removing products from us.
Others were skeptical of Kronk's concern that manufacturers would pull their products from the Alaska market, given that 12 other states have similar laws on the books. The bill passed the Senate 15-5. This is KTOO.